the ADVFN podcast with Justin Waite.
Welcome to the ADVFN podcast, episode 243. On the podcast today, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications, talks about advanced oncotherapy. Plus, I have Jamie Streeter, ex-fund manager turned private investor from compoundincome.org, talks about Matchtech and Aberdeen Asset Management. Plus, have the micro news and the broker forecast. But first, there's a little quote here from the most successful investor all time, and it's quite timely. In fact, it's always, you know, appropriate, but right now, as we have the markets on the edge of this precipice, because apparently today is the day that Greece needs to reach a deal with the European guys there. This is the quote: "I have no idea what the stock market's going to do tomorrow or next week or next month or next year. If you own your stocks as an investment, just like you own an apartment, house or farm, look at them as a business. If you're going to try and buy and sell them based on news or something your neighbour tells you, you're not going to do very well. Find a good bunch of businesses and hold them." And that's his philosophy. And he's done quite well, because, you know, sometimes we can get too close to the market. There are these wild swings in volatility. But zoom out. Look at a chart of the stock market over the last 20, 30 years. All right? And it seems to go up, you know, as long as you're holding good businesses. I said, do your investment, look at a business. And when you're going to buy a share of a company, think, would I like to be part owner of this business? Or are there other businesses I'd prefer to own before this one? Not, will this stock, you know, double my money overnight? Don't think of that. Think of it as a good business. And I think that's the way forward. It's worked for Warren, let's be honest. And joining me on the podcast, Alan Green, CEO of Brand Communications. Okay, Al?
I'm very good, Joss. How are you?
I'm all right, yes. Not too bad. Let's crack into the stock of the day. What are you looking at there, Al?
Okay, well, we're revisiting an old favourite. It's a company called Advanced Oncotherapy, Epicode AVO. We've discussed many times, but it's worth a revisit now because we've had a few events of late, and the share price has come back and is consolidating around 8.5-9p. So it's a good level, I believe, as an entry point for investors that may be considering buying stock in the company. Just to recap on what the company does, Advanced Oncotherapy have developed a proton beam therapy machine that costs a fraction of the existing machines that are out there. Existing machines require huge concrete bunkers. They take up the space of a football pitch. These ones are much smaller, they're portable, and they cost far less money. Huge amount of interest in the technology. They've got letters of intent signed to the value of $200 million. They've signed an agreement to sell a $40 million machine through Sanofi Healthcare in China, and the company put out an announcement recently saying that the testing was on schedule toward the delivery of the light system, which is the terminology for the proton beam therapy machine, and they're on schedule for delivery next year. Along with that, the company announced full year results, revenues of $106,000. Up from $69,000 last year, which are virtually meaningless because the full-year losses widened to $6.3 million against losses of $3.4 million previously. That obviously is a concern, but that's set against the fact that all of the money that's being generated through the fundraising is going into developing the light machine. I mentioned that the shares were consolidating around 8.5 to 9p. After the results announcement at the beginning of June, the chief exec and the chief financial officer both bought shares at 9p. So clearly, there's a lot of support at this level. Broker support as well. Bova Securities buy. They cited an 18 pence price target earlier in the year. Westhouse Securities also buy. They've put their target price under review. Westhouse have also published several notes in the past on the company, and most recently said that they saw there was strong demand given the the profile that proton beam therapy had had over the past year and its obvious costs and advantages. I think the highest profile case, of course, is well known. This young lad, Ashley King.
Yeah, just come back. In fact, this week, is it? I saw on the news this week. He's just come back to the UK this week. Yeah.
Yeah, he's come back to the UK. Of course, there was the manhunt last year when his parents took him out of the country. They wanted, they didn't want the radiotherapy that had been prescribed for him by the local health authority. So they took him. They took him out of the country. They were arrested in Spain. There was a huge manhunt, and eventually they were released. And they took young Asher for proton beam therapy treatment in Czechoslovakia, and he's been diagnosed as cured, which is wonderful news. And he's now back in the UK. So clearly, there's going to be a response from the local health authorities there. They're going to review their procedures and all the rest of it. But nonetheless, clearly it's. It's great news. It's an emotive issue for most families in the UK, and it's important that you know, we don't focus on this area too much, because clearly cancer is an emotive issue for all of us. But the fact is that advanced oncotherapy are progressing with this technology. They're progressing with the machine. It's on schedule for release next year, and it could make a huge difference to lives around the world when it's released. And
yeah, well, thanks to yourself, Al. I spoke to the CEO I've forgotten his name now. What's his name?
Sanjeev Pandya.
Sanjeev Pandya. Yeah. And let's not forget. I mean, we're talking about these proton beam therapy machines. Now, the NHS has ordered two, which is similar to all the machines out there at the moment. Mm. But I was speaking to Sanjeev, and he said, I said, listen, is your machine the most advanced, you know, around at the moment? He said, yes, it is. There aren't any machines like ours around. Yep. And he says, I said, so what's happened with the NHS? He said, well, they've ordered two older version machines, and these are like about five times as big, cost about four times the price. Yep. But trouble is, they can't cancel those orders because they ordered them in 2007, and the procurement process takes about 7-8 years. Yeah. So, you know, they're almost there with these machines. And I said, he said, we've risen this to the level of the House of Lords in about these machines, and our machines have been discussed at House of Lords level, but the door is still open to us after these two machines have been delivered. The door is still open to us, and to be honest, let's be honest, why wouldn't you go with a machine that's a fifth the price tag, and it's a quarter the size, and also is more accurate? I mean, you know, you can order a state-of-the-art machine, which is a no-brainer. And I said to him, how many machines do you think you're selling? And he said, when we're fully up and running, about 15 a year. So, you know, you can do the math. And I did say operating margins, and he said around 40%. So you can do the math on that, you know. And this company at the moment is still in value. So I think if you get the share price now for anywhere near 8 pence, 8.5 pence, it's, you know, for long-term investment, it's a good thing, I think, you know.
I agree totally. I think that's it. You know, the cost of these machines, the portability of the machines, is everything. It's a huge advance over what we have. And I think, you know, various comparisons have been made in the past, but existing radiotherapy is a bit of a sledgehammer to crack a nut, whereas the proton beam therapy is a fine beam, and you can focus on the affected area, and it doesn't affect the surrounding tissue, which of course for children is doubly important. And it's very exciting. We're close now to the machines are close to actually coming to the marketplace, and 15 a year, as you say, do the math.
Yeah, and do you know what? I'm looking into my portfolio at the moment. Look, if the stock's a sell, to get a bit more cash, because I think there's been a bit of weakness in the market, and I want to buy other stuff. And this is, I did look at this, and I thought, should I sell advanced oncotherapy? I thought, no, because you know what? I believe in the story long term, and if I get out now, I may miss a jump in the price, you know, and because it's a long-term story, I know, but you can never tell when the next bit of good news happens. When you have a product like this, you think, do you know what? There could be more orders in China straight away announced, so you never know. So I'm in there, you know, full-time, and, you know, I was in there from, I think, 4.5 pence, I think, but but I'm going to be a long-term holder of this company because I believe in the product. So it's Advanced Oncotherapy AVO. Cheers, Al.
Cheers, Jess.
Time for the micro-macro news. Investors who receive more than £5,000 from company dividends held outside tax-efficient plans, such as ISAs, will pay more tax from next April, George Osborne announced in the budget. So get yourself an ISA. First and foremost, if you're investing in stocks and shares and you haven't maxed out your ISA allowance, which is now £15,240 per year you can put into that, there's no limit to how much that will turn into. So if you're an amazingly brilliant investor and you turn that into a £1 billion, none of it will get taxed. None of it. And you keep adding £15,240 to it each year. So do that before you do anything else. Start moving money over. If you're selling stock from a normal, say, stockbroking account, if you're selling any, move it now out and put it into your ISA account if you can. I mean, that's the most efficient thing you can do tax-wise. Anyway, currently dividends are paid to basic rate. Taxpayers are regarded as taxed already within the corporate tax system. So there's no further tax to pay. And the new rules, only the first £5,000 a year of dividend income will remain exempt. For dividend income above this allowance, basic rate taxpayers will pay 7.5%, while higher rate taxpayers will pay 32.5% tax, and those who pay the additional rate of 45% will pay 38.1% tax. You can read more, go to sharepickers.com, click the link to the Telegraph there, and it's in the Telegraph if you want. But basically, if you receive more than £5,000 in dividends, you'll start getting taxed, unless it's in an ISA. All right, so get the ISA going there. UK interest rates have been held at 0.5% again by the Bank of England's Monetary Policy Committee, and the bank is not expected to raise rates until next year now. 13 million UK families lose an average of £260 a year due to budget changes to working age benefits, say the Institute of Fiscal Studies. Tax credit changes could hit 3 million families, which are likely to lose an average of £1,000, it said. I did this. There's a little calculator on the BBC Business website, and you can see how much you would lose right now in the new budget. And I lose about around about a grand, just under, I think. But I'll put the link. They go to sharepickers.com. I'll put the link to that tax calculator or new tax calculator, the budget calculator, on the website there. Greece has until the end of the day to present new proposals to secure a third bailout from creditors and prevent a possible exit from the Eurozone. Prime Minister Alex Tsipras said the next hours will be crucial. The new proposals will be studied by Eurozone finance ministers on Saturday and a full EU summit on Sunday. Mainland Chinese shares rebounded today after regulators took further steps to try and calm the markets. And I saw stats and was saying that the amount of how much the markets have fallen in China is the equivalent of about 10 Greece's GDPs, something ridiculous like that, I think, or even more than that, actually. But it's gone up by 150% in the last year, the stock market in China. But it's come down 30% in the last month. So it's scary. And a lot of people are, I think it's about 90 million private investors there. So and they've borrowed a margin. A lot of them, you know, borrowed money to invest. And it's quite scary for them. And, you know, it's shocking. If you put the graph, overlay graph of the Chinese stock market against the Dow in 1929, it looks exactly the same. The Shanghai Composite Index reversed early losses to close up 5.76%. A move to ban big investors from selling stocks may have helped to support the market. Meanwhile, the state-run news agency, Xinhua, said police were investigating vicious short selling on the country's stock market. Selling's fine, but vicious short selling. Oh no, we won't have that. And joining me on the podcast right now is Jamie Streeter, ex-fund manager and now a private investor and blogger with his own website, compoundincome.org. You all right, Jamie?
Yeah, I'm fine, thanks, Justin. How are you?
Good, thanks. Thanks for coming on the podcast. Now, we follow you on Twitter, and I've looked at your website quite a few times. And essentially now, this is what you do, isn't it, for a living? You're retired from the city. How long are you in the city for as a fund manager?
I worked in the city as a fund manager and analyst for 24 years.
Okay.
So it's quite a long stint.
Yeah, and so you decided to check, you know, cash in your chips there. And this was, I was chatting to you before, 2009, which is like...
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. It was actually March 2009. So with great timing or lucky timing, I managed to hit the bottom of the market when I started investing on my own behalf. I felt I just sort of had enough of the city at that stage and some of the restrictions that get put upon you when you're investing your clients' money and if you're trying to do stuff for yourself. So it seemed like a good time to go it alone and I had enough to be getting on with, So that's what I've been doing.
So, and how's it been? What's it like? I mean, I assume working for a city fund manager is quite strict. And now you're completely on your own to do what you want. What's it like? Even the change in lifestyle, is it a bit odd not being told what to do?
Yeah, I mean, it does come as a bit of a shock to the system, I suppose, when you've had that sort of set up for years, and the routine of going to work and commuting and all that sort of stuff. Although equally, it's quite nice to not have that that drudgery to go through. You just sort of stroll from the kitchen into your office and check the markets, check the news flow, and see how it's going. And then also to be able to just invest in the way that I see fit without lots of restrictions and clients to report to. So it's nice.
But the discipline, though, because I know with investing, I've been a private investor like 20 years now, and I thought, I sort of quote Warren Buffett and Charlie Munger, and Charlie Munger says one of the biggest best qualities you can have as an investor is discipline. And when you're investing in someone else's money, comes with it responsibility and also discipline, doesn't it? But now, do you find yourself, because you've done this for so long, that's almost automated anyway, your discipline is there?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, it almost comes like second nature to me, I suppose, because I was a fund manager for so long, and you get into the routine of checking the news flow first thing in the morning, checking the markets and checking your portfolio. I'm just essentially doing the same job as I was doing before. But the difference is now I'm just doing it for myself.
Yeah.
I suppose kind of saving myself the fees that I'd be paying a private client manager or somebody else to do it for me. Mm. So in a way, that's my job in that sense. But I say it's without a lot of the extra hassle and everything else that goes with actually having a full-time job.
Yeah.
But obviously it means I don't have a salary coming in, but I get my income from my investments.
So. And is that what it's about? So compound income, essentially, as it says, it's earning money. But is it you largely invest in dividend-paying stocks? Is that the case?
Yeah, that's right. I mean, my investment style, I suppose, if you were trying to categorise it, would be described as income and growth investing. So. Mm-hmm. Essentially, I look for stocks that have a yield. I wouldn't tend to look at things below 2% yield.
Okay.
But then I also have a sort of value bias to what I do, because I'm sort of trained and sort of brought up as a value investor. So I also tend to not invest in anything on over 20 times earnings. So I tend to like to use that as a simple sort of rule, 2 and 20. So think of 2% yield and 20 times PE. And then kind of everything that I'm looking at needs to fall within those sort of parameters. And if I've got a stock that I've bought more cheaply, which has then been re-rated, say, to a sub 2% yield or gone on to over 20 times, then I'll look at it very closely and think, well, do I really want to still be in this? Is it looking good enough to hold on to, or be quite wary of it, and then potentially use that as a sell trigger?
Yeah, and this is a hard and fast rule, because do you know what? I've tried to enforce rules, and I do try to stick to them. But now, I'll give you an example. I mean, I'm looking at Auto Trader, and I like the company because it's my father owns a car sales, and he says, do you know what? This day and age, you can't live without Auto Trader. You have to be paying the money every month, and it's the dominant leader in the market. It's got a 50% operating margin. Return on capital employed is ridiculous. In triple figures, and it's just a super, it's a dominant player. And because of this, sometimes you have to treat it a bit differently. I think like Rightmove, and in fact the same people in charge of Rightmove, in charge of Auto Trader, they are in such a dominating position in the market. Don't they deserve a higher rating? Really, do you think that?
Well, they do. Yeah, and I think that's sort of something that I look for, is those sort of classic compounding businesses that have those characteristics you just talked about, like the high return on capital, good operating margins, and say a good market position. And as you say, that does tend to get recognised by the market, and they tend to move on to high ratings. So that's why I say you have to then think about it quite carefully and weigh up, well, their market position, what's going on in their marketplace, how sustainable is that, how sustainable are those returns, and if you think they can carry on rolling out the business, perhaps like the restaurant group is a good example of that, which I bought quite cheaply during the sort of financial crisis or thereafter, and then it got re-rated from about 12 times to 20 times in a sub 2% yield. But it got good return characteristics there in terms of the return on capital and the margins that they can make. So, and they're now expanding more rapidly in terms of new outlets and things. So, and that's all funded via internal cash flows, which also supports a growing dividend. So along the way, I've enjoyed the rise from the re-rating, but then once you get to that point, you know you're not going to get the tailwind of the re-rating. You're then just relying upon them being able to repeat that cycle of reinvesting the cash flows and churning out the dividends. Now, quite frankly, that if you're confident that's going to continue, then yes, you can continue running with it, but you need to be aware that you're sort of running a momentum stock at that stage, and it needs to carry on doing that. And if there's any sort of slip up or disappointment down the line, then it's going to be quite vulnerable given the rating. So, mm-hmm. I mean, I'll then look around the market and see, well, is there anything else that can give me, you know, a similar sort of characteristics, but has actually been overlooked and is on a much cheaper rating? So, and if I find something that seems similarly attractive in terms of its financial metrics, but is on a much lower rating, you know, be on maybe 14 times and perhaps a 4% yield, but has similar rates of return and a way of compounding those returns, then I might think about taking profits and moving over to that one. So that's kind of the way it works.
Yeah, okay, cool. So how have you done? I mean, can you say how you've done since 2009? Are you happy with how you've done?
Yeah, I'm very happy with how I've done. There's a sort of tab on the website where I put some information up about my portfolio and some of the returns that I've earned on that. So, and that really represents the money that I've got in my ISA, which is sort of probably the largest part of my funds that I'm investing, which is obviously good because it's in a tax-free environment. And that's pretty much trebled over the last 6 years. So, and that can equates to sort of going on 20% compound annual rates of return. So.
Nice. I like that. Okay, Jamie, well, let's move on to some specific stocks then. What are you looking at that you think, you know, you've put through your filters and you think has some potential upside? What are you looking at there?
Well, one stock that I recommended to my readers back in February of this year is a smaller company listed on AIM called Matchtech. Mm-hmm. Has the ticker code MTEC.
Yeah.
It's got a market cap of about 170 million. It was established in 1984 and has been listed, as I say, on AIM since 2006. It's basically the UK's leading specialist engineering and professional services recruitment business. And they provide sort of contract staff, temporaries, and permanent staff. And that revenue is split roughly 70-30 between contract and permanent staff. Now, the reason for suggesting it now is that, like a lot of other small cap stocks from about 2012 to about April 2014, I don't know if you remember, there was sort of a peak in the small cap market at that point in time.
Yeah.
This one went from about £2 to £6.40 over that period. So it had a great sort of run, I suppose, as people were getting confident or more confident about recovery in the economy, and this one being a good play on that. However, with that sort of turn in the small cap market at that time in April 2014, the shares then drifted back to February of this year to about 500p level, at which point they also did a deal to buy one of their competitors called Networkers International, which is a sort of global telecom and technology recruiter. So it was an add-on to their business. It sort of brought some new areas which were quite well aligned with what they were doing, and also brought them some geographic expansion. So they expected, you know, earnings enhancement from that in the first 4 years, and there'd be some cost savings and synergies and things like that, and they've sort of merged the boards, and you know, some directors have stepped down. So that was the reason for recommending it when it was down at £5. One, it had come back and it had got onto a decent sort of rating. It's not done a whole lot since then, to be honest. It's flipped up to about £5.50 at best recently, and then it's sort of been waxing and waning between that £5 and £5.50 level. So it seems to have been building a bit of a base on the charts, if you like. And the reason for mentioning it now is that it's a July year-end company, so that means that they'll probably have a full-year update coming out next month. So there's a sort of news flow item due, which could be a trigger for sort of more activity in the shares, because it's not being the biggest company in the world, doesn't tend to trade that actively by the looks of things. And in their most recent update, they sort of said they were trading in line, but they did have some significant new contract wins on the back of the deal that they'd done, and that seemed to augur quite well for the prospects going forward. And since then, they've seen some earnings upgrades as well, which is something else I like to look for in a stock as a confirmation that things are going well and the trends are improving. So I wouldn't be surprised to see these full year sort of update when it comes out in August being on the positive side.
Yeah, and also, sorry, like you said, a nice dividend there, the 3.6% that shows at the moment, and it's well covered. Yeah, and go on, sorry.
It's got a strong balance sheet as well. So, I mean, those are a lot of the characteristics I like to look for: a good yield, well covered, strong balance sheet, and then also the earnings revisions being positive. So it ticks a lot of the boxes of things I like to see. It's also got good director shareholdings there and a good list of institutional holders as well. So I'd say it's one of a better quality sort of stocks on AIM. You obviously do get a lot of rubbish on AIM and can be a bit of a sort of wild west, but I think this one is a quality player.
Yeah.
And if you look out to July 2016, because obviously we're only just about a month or a few weeks away from the year end now, the rating falls to about 11 times earnings and the yield would be up to about 4%. And I think basically that's assuming 15% earnings growth and 7% dividend growth for next year. But I think they'll probably do 22p of dividend this year, which means I think you probably see a bit of an upgrade to those dividend forecasts. And on the back of that alone, I could see the shares up to 600p, which would give you about 10% gain from where they're trading today, around sort of 540, 550 level. Mm. However, if they were to get a sort of small re-rating back to about 13 times they traded on not so long ago, that could get you back up to the peaks of last year around 640. Which would be a 16% rise, and if you added on the dividend yield of 4% or plus a bit more if you take the final from this year, you'd be looking at a 20% return, so potentially over, say, the next 12 months or something like that.
Nice.
And that's not to say that would be the sort of cap of it, because I think 13 times for this one, I know recruiters don't always get onto the highest ratings in the world, but if it could move on to maybe 14 or 15 times potentially, I don't see any reason why that couldn't happen, given the improving economy, the improving labour market and the skill shortages in some of the sectors that they're operating in, then you could maybe see it up to 700p, which I know there was a broker who did a note just after that deal and they had a price target at that time of those sort of levels. So those are the sort of sort of £6 to £7 I could see it getting into that sort of range in the next 12 months, as I say, and I think that could give people a decent total return.
Yeah, and do you ever look? I mean, are you strictly fundamentals, or do you look at the charts as well?
I do look at charts. I mean, I wouldn't call myself a chartist, but I think it's always instructive to look at a chart when you come across a stock maybe you're not familiar with, and it looks good on the numbers. A quick look at the chart can often alert you to the fact that if at the end of it there's a sudden drop. You can say, oh, well, actually, what's going on here? And you do a quick look at the news and say, oh, yeah, they just had a profits one. Right, now that explains why the numbers look so funny, because that hasn't been factored in there yet. So it's always useful to look at that. And also it just sort of tells you where it's come from, because you might get excited about something and then you look at the chart and realise, actually, it's just doubled in the last 6 months. So just makes you think a bit more.
Yeah, exactly. Well, do you know what? Looking at the Matchtech chart, it's quite interesting actually, because it's now having a golden cross, which we know the 50-day moving average crossing up over the 200-day moving average. And the last time that happened was October 2012, when it was at £2.07. So people say it's so people say it's very much the start of a trend. So it's interesting to see if it will continue the trend now, because like I said, it's in a good position chart wise. So cool.
It's a catalyst coming up with the final results sort of update.
So it's consolidated. It did punch above that 200-day moving average, a bit of a bear flag there. It's come back down, consolidated. And like you said, they may have that catalyst there as the earnings coming out very soon. Okay, that's cool. That's Matchtech. And anything else in your thoughts there, Jamie, stock-wise?
Well, the only other thing I've been thinking about, obviously, we've seen the setback in the FTSE and sort of other global markets with all this sort of Greek concerns recently and what's been going on in the Chinese market. One thought, it's a bit of a sort of contrarian idea, sort of bold trader sort of move, if you like. If you were prepared to take a punt that Greeks might come up with a proposal that's acceptable to the EU over the weekend and that perhaps gets sort of fudged again for another few months or years or until the next crisis, obviously the market could breathe a big sigh of relief. So a sort of more blue chip idea way of playing that would be like the asset management companies, and I was going to suggest Aberdeen Asset Management.
Yeah.
Obviously a FTSE stock, trades on around 11 times this year's earnings and a 5.5% yield. So, often people say, oh, don't invest in funds from fund managers because they're just quasi trackers and all this sort of stuff. And often you're better off investing in fund managers themselves because they make so much money out of running the funds.
Mm-hmm.
And this one, they've got a very strong balance sheet. So it's got big dividend yield there. It's reasonably well covered, about 1.6, 1.7 times. And they do have surplus capital, which they've said already earlier in the year, they're going to be undertaking a share buyback program as well. So that should act as some sort of support. And again, coming back to your looking at charts, this one over the last couple of years, each time it's dipped below £4, it got down to about 360 on one occasion, and then sort of 370, 380, and it's got down there again just recently in this latest sell-off. It's tended to rise back up with the market, and on a couple of occasions it's got back up to £5. So again, I could see this one potentially getting back up to £5 if markets stabilise and recover and we continue with the sort of benign bull market sort of conditions we've been in. Now, obviously, if you think everything's unravelling and we're just heading for the end of the bull market and bear market is just about to take hold, then clearly you wouldn't really want to be charging into that one.
But yeah, well, do you know
pay
what?
Your money and take your choice.
Well, exactly. And also, looking at the chart, there's a risk-reward factor there. You know, like I said, it's hit twice now, around about 380, and bounced off it. So, you know, if you're scared of it going lower, you can always put a stop loss just below that, because, you know, it's a quite a robust support level. And if it breaks that, then it definitely is going lower. But
it hit 383 the other day, I think, and had a bounce.
Yeah,
we'll see what happens.
Marvellous. Well, Jamie, nice to have you on, and I will, you know, get you on again. That's Jamie Streeter from compoundingham.org. Cheers, Jamie.
Thanks, Justin. Cheers.
And here's the micro news. Here's the good news. Barratt Developments expects to see a 45% increase in full-year pre-tax profit to $565 million from $390 million last year amid continued strong demand in the housing market. Supergroup posted a 2% rise in pre-tax profit and said it signed a joint venture that will allow it to enter the Chinese market. Online gaming and betting group Bwin Party confirmed that it received an improved takeover offer from smaller rival. It's ambitious. From GVC Holdings, priced at 11 pence per share in new shares and cash that were valued at roughly £900 million. Recruitment from Hays reported a strong second quarter as group net fee growth improved by 9% and said currencies movements remained a challenge for the company. Conviviality Retail confirmed it's ended takeover talks in an explanatory statement on why its shares were suspended today. Ascent Resources surged after the company said it had reached an agreement with EnQuest to restructure a debt of approximately $3 million due for a payment in December 2015 into around $2 million of convertible loan notes. Homeware retailer Dunelm Group reported strong sales. They're always doing quite well in sales, Dunelm. Reporting a 33% lift, due to good summer performance. I'm reading the next page here, the next sentence. Centamin exceeded its own production guidance this quarter, reporting a 33% lift in gold production at its Sakari mine. DIY firm Grafton Group said it remained positive despite modest margins in a competitive market. Advertising agency WPP has reportedly teamed up with private equity firm General Atlantic to bid for Tesco's loyalty card business, Dunhumby. Sounds like a man, you know, it's hard of learning, doesn't it? Hello, Dunhumby. You're right, son. Barclays is reportedly in talks with potential buyers of its retail operations in Italy and Portugal as part of an asset disposal program, which the bank's next chief executive will be under pressure to accelerate after Anthony Jenkins was ousted on Wednesday. And here's the bad news. Plus 500 reported a decline in revenues during the second quarter of the year and said for the full year its margins would be significantly lower, but revenues would be similar to 2014 as it invests to acquire new customers. Revenues were flat at Primark owner Associated British Foods because they need to spin out Primark and leave the rest because the rest is dragging it down. At 2%... sales? Yeah, owner revenues 2% up, but against the same period last year, the currency's moves are ignored. So they had currency headwinds as well. Shares in Gold Soccer Centres dropped after the firm reported a like-for-like sales decline of 2% in a trading update. Hedge funds have been cutting back on their risks due to situations in Greece, according to the to Man Group manager. Do you know what? I was lucky with Man Group. I sold that at the right. It's all about £2, down to 150 now. Which is quite lucky. They did go up to about 2.17, I think. But I bought them about 70 pence. I was very lucky in the timing there. And Schroders recently I sold. I own two fund managers. And I was, I think, I can't remember. Do you know, something like, something. I'm almost double month. I've had Schroders for a long time. but I pretty much doubled my money, and of course dividends on top. But I sold them at £32 recently, and I think, you know, with all this volatility, fund managers are coming in for a bit of a, you know, bit of whacking, really. Balfour Beatty again has issued another profits warning, with pre-tax profit likely to be lower by £120 million to £150 million due to problems discovered in various parts of the infrastructure construction group as part of continuing business review. Drax expects the removal of the climate change levy exemption for renewable electricity generated after August 15th, announced in Wednesday's budget, to lead to a reduction in EBITDA of around £30 million in 2015 and £60 million in 2016. Not good. Emerging markets asset manager Ashmore Group shed more assets in the last three-month period and said it remains cautious of US rate hikes. Aviva, a provider of engineering data and design IT systems, said it remains resilient business despite the challenging market environment. That's never a good thing. It's a challenging market environment. Premier Oil has slashed operating costs after posting a 34% dip in revenue against the same period last year. And Gulf Keystone Petroleum has slashed production forecasts ahead of its annual general meeting. Okay, it's time for the broker forecasts. Here are the upgrades. Canaccord Genuity has upgraded John Wood Group to hold, price target £6. Investec has upgraded Standard Chartered to hold, price target 970. XN BNP Paribas has upgraded HSBC Holdings to a neutral, price target £6. XN BNP Paribas again upgraded Rockhopper Exploration to neutral, price target £73. Berenberg has upgraded Smith & Nephew to buy, price target £12.75. And Jefferies International has initiated coverage of National Grid with buy, price target £9. Here are the downgrades. XM BNP Paribas, they're busy today, those guys. Well done, guys. Downgraded Capita Group to neutral, price target £12.75. They've also downgraded Soco International, with underperformed, price target £1.58. And Deutsche Bank has downgraded UBM to hold, price target £5.50. That's it from today's podcast. Do me a big favour. You may have a couple of issues with the podcast. I'm switching over hosts. I'm going from Libsyn to Audio Boom. So you now listen to Audio Boom on the go. You could before though. So you may see a duplicate. If you've got the iPhone app podcast, you may see a duplicate of my podcast, but that won't happen for long. But please, if you can, if you enjoy the podcast anyway, can you tell a friend? Please, just tell one friend. So all you need to do, if you know one friend who may be into investing in stocks and shares or may have an interest about it, please tell them and pass it on. I'd be muchos apreciados. Thank you very much. Don't forget, please don't buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation of the podcast. It's only opinion, okay? And it's not your opinion, and it's your money you'll be investing. So please, do your own research. Thanks for listening. Speak tomorrow.
The ADBFN podcast with Justin Waite.